frankly, after 60, for people who aren't there yet, you're going to have to really think about what you want to do, because you no longer have the ability to force the will to do what's not in your highest good. So a lot of things you need to make yourself do, you can't do anymore.
I'm Michael Max, and this is Geological. I've been thinking about what drives racism, or for that matter, nationalism, or the long-standing feuds that can span decades in a family, or how it is that people seem to constantly divide up along the lines of us and them. I've been thinking about those on the wrong end of ideology who were labeled counter-revolutionary and taken down in China's Cultural Revolution, forced through a struggle session, made to admit their sins, and then rehabilitated by being destroyed. I've been thinking about how people in Russia, where my roots lie, were purged and killed for not being sufficiently on board with the social change of the day, where people who had skills and the ability to farm and be good at it were sent away to work re-education camps. Their sin was that they had a polished skill at producing grain and feeding people. In Rwanda, Hutu killed Tutsi. Indonesians, they killed the Chinese minority, who often were financially successful due to the way they accumulated some material resources through persevering hard work. I don't need to remind you of Germany in the last century, the ethnic cleansing in the Bosnian War, or what has happened and is happening to black people here in the United States. We can slap on whatever label we want that allows us to disconnect from someone who's not like us. It's an old, tried and true method for dividing and distancing ourselves from another human being in such a way that we see them as lesser. We know exactly how this works, and it brings out the worst in us as human beings. What concerns me more is what's underneath. And what's underneath, I suspect, is hatred. And hatred's not something that resides in those that we dislike or disagree with or fear. It lies in our own hearts. What concerns me is the hatred in my heart, my own personal share of something we all experience and perhaps even feed. If there is a Xie Qi, a Qi that is truly evil, I would name that Qi hatred. That's the true pathogen. That's the seed from which self-righteousness and a desire for domination arise. If there is an original sin, I suspect it is not that we have knowledge of good and evil, but that we let the evil run us. That we have not awakened to our own personal share of hatred. And so we split it off and onto others, and then, in an attempt to make the world a better place, we seek to destroy them. The problem with hatred is that it feels good. It feels good to stand up to the cops. It's invigorating to take down the man. Our righteous anger tastes good after tweeting out vitriol and aggression for the cause. Our own dark heart doesn't feel so dark to us. It feels like the right side of history. It feels like correcting an injustice. It can feel like we're making a positive difference in the world. I am not suggesting that we don't do what we can to repair the fractured and scattered light of this world. In fact, I think it's what we're here for. There are voices throughout all of history who have arisen to remind us of this impossible and necessary task. There's a saying from the Jewish tradition that says, it's not your responsibility to finish the work of perfecting the world, but you are not free to desist from it either. I suspect it might help to examine our own flawed hearts first. As doctors, we know it's vital to first do no harm. We are living through an emotionally charged time, and rarely do emotions show us one clear way to proceed.
The world's not so one-dimensional, and our emotions often are deeply entangled together.
So sometimes, it's not so easy to understand our own heart. Coming up in a few minutes is a conversation with Lillian Bridges on how emotions can intertwine in ways that bring confusion and sometimes have us working across purposes in our lives. Lucky for us, the lens of the five phases can help us to gain clarity for both our patients and for ourselves. I think you'll find that Lillian's insights into the dynamics of how emotions can intertwine will be helpful in your clinical work. Hey, you've heard me talking about some acupuncture, going on for about 2 years now. In that time,
my thinking with acupuncture has changed, mostly because I find myself working out of a set of flexible principles and less thinking about which acupuncture point functions to do what. I'll be back a little later in the show to tell you more about working from a set of principles that on the surface seem simple, and yet they open up a perspective that helps you to track the complexities of human health and behavior. These are trying times, and I do hope that we find our way from chaos to calm. As states in the U.S. begin to open up and lift the shelter-in-place orders, many of us are weighing how we may best serve our community. Safely reopening a practice requires patience and planning. Don't go it alone. Lhasa OMS is here to help with webinars and blog posts on reopening a practice, and they are ready to deliver the supplies and supplements that you need to support your patients. Visit lhasaoms.com for more details. Well, you know, we all know the significant role that emotions play in Chinese medicine. Let's get into this conversation on how entangled emotions can impede the healing process and what we can do about it. Lillian Bridges, welcome back to Chiological.
Thank you. Hi.
Hi. It's great to have you here. We ran into each other last fall, back when people could run into each other. At the Pacific Symposium, you had done a delightful afternoon on face reading. I was especially, I guess, entranced, enticed. I was really, something like that. The way that you were talking about being able to read the face and understand what's going on with the organs, and how sometimes things like get enmeshed or entangled with each other.
Yeah, that's a tricky thing. You know, because emotions are, they're necessary. We're human beings. We need to emote. We need to, you know, express and emotions and receive emotions, and, you know, facilitates communication. The problem is, and it's not a huge problem, but the problem is people tend to either overuse or underuse their emotions, and either one of those is not so good. I find the most difficult thing is not whether you express them or not. People tend to know how to do both, but I find that when you have more than one emotion connected to each other, they're hard to disentangle. And so for a lot of people, for example, if you have grief and you have guilt because you didn't go see your father before he died as much as you wanted to, it's hard to undo the grief, you know, to work on the grief because the guilt is there. So you might have to do the guilt first before you do the grief. You know, it's like, and that's kind of a tricky thing to untangle, because you don't nearly know that they are tangled. That's why it takes so long.
Exactly. And the thing that really caught my attention, because you were talking about exactly this thing last fall, and
my mom had just died, so I was talking about grief.
It was the perfect time.
Yeah.
To talk about that. I mean, you got to inhabit your own experience, and through inhabiting your own experience, share something with us that was very pertinent and very real. And this whole idea, because, you know, I'm not a psychologist or a psychotherapist or anything like that, so I don't have a lot of training in, you know, how the human psyche works. And I tend to think of things in fairly simplistic ways. So it's like, oh yeah, they're dealing with grief, or we're dealing with guilt, or we're dealing with this, or dealing with that. And when you started talking about how things get enmeshed and tangled together, I thought, that's right. And that's why it's so hard.
It's really difficult. I work with, you know, clients all the time, and we talk about old traumas, and I find a lot of enmeshed emotions in old trauma. When someone's had abuse, especially by someone that they love, you know, a parent or whatever, love gets entangled with fear, or gets entangled with, you know, anger. So you're seeing that entanglement. It's hard to process the relationship altogether and the traumas that occurred, because the emotions are so conflicting and confused, you know?
And maybe even opposite, love and hate.
Yeah. It's like, well, one of my students said recently, she said she realizes that the love that she got was pretty toxic. Mm-hmm. And so she's trying to separate out the fact that she was loved, even though she was loved in a way that she didn't want to get it, you know, that kind of thing. And so for her, there's a lot of anger in her relationship with her parent, with her mother. And she had to really look at that and separate those things out. It's like, sometimes her mother was quite wonderful, by the way, and sometimes she was quite terrible. And so she was really struggling with this kind of toxic love that she was dealing with, you know. And I just said, okay, let's work on that. And that's one of the things I do, is help people realize, you know, what are they feeling, and are there emotions that are entangled? And most people have entangled emotions.
I think you're right. Yes, I think you're absolutely right that we do. And that's why it's so hard, partly because they're entangled. Mm-hmm. And partly because we don't know that we're dealing with an entanglement. If we knew we were dealing with an entanglement, I suspect that already helps to untangle things, because on one hand we can go, oh yeah, there's that love piece. Oh yeah, there's that resentment piece.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think what happens, and this is something that I've talked a lot about to parents, we need to teach our kids emotional intelligence. You know, it's like you kind of have to teach them how to recognize what things feel like. I mean, when I was young, my grandmother used to say, okay, make that face. And what does that make you feel like inside? And then she said, say, okay, now when you're feeling something, watch what face you make. And she'd do it from both directions and say, pay attention to what you're feeling, right? And so I learned very young to separate, for example, sadness from grief. Even though they're similar, they're not the same in terms of layers, right? Or sorrow and grief. She would make me practice that kind of emotional intelligence. So I did teach my sons how to do that too. And I talk a lot about how we don't have that kind of training, so we don't know how to recognize what an emotion is. And you watch an ad that says, are you, you know, feeling sad, unmotivated, all these things. And it's an ad for depression. Well, depression can't have all that stuff. Do you know what I mean? I mean, in Chinese medicine, a liver depression is the liver's not functioning properly. You're not fully motivated, but sadness is not a liver emotion. It's a heart emotion. So I think it's an emotion from the heart that goes to the lungs, but it's not part of the liver at all. And yet if the liver's not strong, you might feel sad because your fire isn't getting any, you know, the mother-child cycle is not getting any juice, you know?
So this is really, I mean, when we learn Chinese medicine and emotions in the five phases, you know, it's very sort of stable. It's like, yeah, joy in the heart, sadness in the lung. What I just heard you talking about is sadness could come from the heart, but then it goes to the lung.
Right.
And it might even be because the liver's not strong enough to give enough fire to the fire.
Yes, exactly. And for example, right now, what I'm seeing a lot of, which I think is really interesting, I'm seeing tremendous amounts of fear because everybody's terrified of, you know, this virus that we have, which, you know, don't watch too much news. That's all I have to say. But you're going to see a lot of discoloration in the chin area, like a darkness, a kind of shadowing. And you're also, if someone's chronically afraid, they're going to have like, you know, lines here or indentations or even orange peel kind of skin. So I'm seeing a lot of that, but I'm also seeing a lot of worry, which is up here. And worry shows up right here, not in the impatience lines up here in the forehead, but right here in this area that scrunches up when you're concentrating a lot or you're
like right between the eyebrows, like right where your intang is.
Right between the eyes above. Mm. Right here is impatience, annoyance, frustration, it's liver. Right here is spleen, and right here is pancreas. So right this area right here, when it's got lines or it's congested, is worry. So I'm seeing a lot of people who feel fear and worry. And I say, oh, are you worrying a lot? And they go, no. I go, you're fearful? They go, oh, yeah, of course. So they'll own one of them. But actually what I'm seeing is a combination. Uh-huh. And they have what's called dread. Like dread is, in my opinion, a combination of worry and fear. So when we look back and people are traumatized by this time, they're going to think, oh, I was really afraid, but they're not going to feel that the worry was also involved. So a lot of people I know, for example, are gaining weight right now. Even though they're eating really well, they're trying to do their exercises and all that, they're gaining weight. And I said, well, artificial grounding when you're stressed out, but also because when your spleen is so involved, spleen, stomach, pancreas are so involved with worry, it's going to make you gain weight because it's in your brain instead of your stomach. You know.
So, is it because the pancreas is weak that the worry is making the pancreas weak, and so there's weight gain, or is there some other mechanism going on here?
Stomach weak too. You know, if you look at the parts of the body in Chinese medicine that give you energy, of course, you have getting energy from the kidneys, and you have, I mean, liver qi basically is the ability to do and move. And I think when you look at spleen, stomach, pancreas, you're looking at something that you're a system that's trying to create energy from food, which we'll talk about, I know, later. And I think when the system is involved with the thinking instead of digesting food, it's going to cause a problem. So a lot of times people worry about what they're going to eat, and then it makes it not good for them because they're worrying about it, because then the energy is in their brain instead of in their stomach.
So they're too busy digesting their ideas.
Yeah.
Instead of digesting their food.
And right now I'm seeing so much dread that people aren't recognizing they're doing both emotions together. And that actually is why they're having trouble getting through this, because they have so much dread. And part of that is a projection to the future, you know, of negative outcomes, which I really watch myself. I don't allow myself to do that very much. You know, I have things to do.
Now, how do you do that? How do you manage to keep yourself present and out of the future? I mean, I know it's very easy for all of us as human beings to either dwell in the past or project into the future. It's part of the curious thing that makes us the critters that we are. Yeah.
Well, I think if you're very developed of wood energy, you're going to do past. And
wood energy goes to the past.
Yeah, wood always goes to the past. And it's going to say things like, I want things the way they used to be. Well, nothing's ever the way it used to be. So that's actually like not logical at all. But there's this really important energy of the wood element that goes, you know, I'm going to look at the past. Okay. So they're very past oriented. With the metal element, it looks to the future. And it's going to have ideals about how things should be and how you wish they could be and all those kinds of things. But both of those, as you know, don't keep you in the present. Mm-hmm. And I think you have to find things that keep you present. For example, one of my friends who's very fiery got a puzzle, which I've never in my life thought she'd get a puzzle. Oh, seriously, this is like something she wouldn't do. Mm-hmm. It's the only thing that makes her stay in her body and kind of be here. And she's using it as kind of like a moving meditation in a way, you know, kind of a concentration on every day. She does a little bit of it and it's helping her a lot. And I started laughing and I said, you got to find things to get involved in where you have a certain focus. And that keeps you present. Otherwise, you're going to go off into, oh my God, how long am I going to have to do this for? And what's going to happen? And, you know, or you're going to go back and go, oh, I'm so angry. I can't do what I used to do. I can't go to the restaurant. I can't, you know, go to the grocery store easily. It's like that kind of stuff. So you're seeing people really playing out those two elements a lot.
Yeah. I hadn't thought of a puzzle as a kind of visual meditation. Of a thing that you just bring yourself back and here's something to focus on.
I'm cooking a lot because, you know, you have to pay attention when you're cooking.
Or you cut your fingers off. Yes, I've had that experience.
Yeah. Or you burn something. You get the broiler on. It's like, oh God, there goes the garlic bread.
Yeah. I'm curious about wood going to the past, because when I think of wood, I think of that spring energy. I think of like that new plant coming up. I think of this new aggressively outward and new energy. So I'm curious how that connects with past.
It's the roots of the tree.
It's the roots of the tree.
Yeah, it's going back to the roots. So it's going back to the way things used to be. And it's, you know, it's opposite on the you know, the five element chart where Earth is in the center. It's opposite of course of metal. And mm-hmm. We know metal in the future. It's always about technology and all, you know, all the new, right? The new in a different way, new technologically, I should say. And so therefore you're going to see it's the opposite, you know, in the five elements, and it's the roots. And in feng shui, it's very well known that, you know, wood is where you deal with the past stuff and metal is where you deal with the future stuff.
This is so interesting to me. So you've got this past root, mm-hmm. and I would suspect that a very healthy wood has its past root, but it's actually focusing its energy on that new sprout upward. Coming out.
Upward and outward. Mm-hmm. But that's what always wants to go up and out, right?
Mm-hmm.
Tree branches.
And unless it's going back and looking at its roots and going, remember back in the good old days when we could have a beer together?
Yeah. So I have friends who are doing virtual cocktail parties, which I haven't done yet.
I've got a neighbor down the street, and as soon as the weather warms up, it's been cold here, we're planning to have some wine at a social distance level. You know, we can't sit on the stoop together. But we could sit within 10 feet of each other.
That's right. You know? We're just going to have to adapt, aren't we? but I see a lot of people really struggling right now and with tangled emotions. And I also recently said to one of my students, what I'm seeing a lot of is people are still enough right now because they're home. Mm-hmm. And old issues are coming up. And that may or may not be fun. That's all I have to say. It's like, it may not be good for you to do. It may be great for you to do, but people are dealing with stuff. You know, they're stuck at home with a partner they're not so happy with. Maybe it's time for some conversations, or, you know, they realize their kids are not, you know, doing as many chores as you'd like them to get, and this is the time where you can get them to do chores again. I mean, it's all kinds of stuff that's coming up. You know, you missing your mom or whatever it is.
Yes. The I'm thinking about our breakfast table this morning, which feels really different. Usually it's breakfast is kind of a happy thing. Mm-hmm. And these days, I wouldn't say it's unhappy, but it's like there's definitely a cloud. This is like palpable cloud. And it's hard to speak about.
Yeah, it is. And you feel kind of guilty if you know, look, I'm safe, you know, I'm healthy, and mm-hmm. and yet I'm complaining and I'm unhappy. It's like it's kind of a hard thing. You're saying, oh, you know, thank God I'm not sick, but I'm not happy.
Yes.
And I'm just trying to get to be happy that I'm alive, you know. It's like I'm happy.
So we're kind of back to this tangled emotion thing. Now, you have kind of a secret weapon. Uh-huh. You know, you learned from your grandmother. I loved you talking about her, like, oh, when you feel this way, make that face. I mean, that's a Chinese face reader being taught at an early age, right? That's your training.
Old-fashioned apprenticeship method.
Yes, and very embodied.
Yeah, a funny story about one of my students who's a great face reader, Saffron Elledge in England. But we were discussing this line right here in the chin that says that, you know, if you overuse your body, then you're going to have to retire when you're between 60 and 62 because your body's going to be tired out. And frankly, after 60, for people who aren't there yet, you're going to have to really think about what you want to do, because you no longer have the ability to force the will to do what's not in your highest good. So a lot of things you can make yourself do, you can't do anymore. We were talking about there are probably other meanings that we don't know enough about. And she said, well, how about this one? And she said, so put her hand in her chin. And she said, look what happens when you push your chin like this. Not very happy. Mm. Your chin up. And that makes the line. She goes, that's also a line of resignation, that you are accepting this is the way it is and you can't change it. So, you know, you don't want to do it, but you feel like you have to do it. And luckily, after 60, you can't do it.
But yeah, you can't.
She came up with that term, and it was like brilliant. You know, so she was doing exactly what I taught my students to do, that my grandmother taught me, is make that face, figure out how you make that face. You know, what does that mean? What does it feel like?
Yeah, so you can get it from the inside.
Yes, yes.
So you get it from the inside.
I think people just have to be still enough too to feel what they feel. It's like, I think we spend so much time as human beings avoiding some of the feelings we don't want to feel.
And it's so easy in this world. There's Netflix. There's a million sports chant. Well, do they still have sports?
Not right now.
So, a lot of replays, though.
Yeah, people are going to have to like deal with this stuff, right?
Yeah, yeah. Things to deal with. You just said something, and I want to come back to the emotions here in a moment. It's a thread that's going to run through this conversation. But you just said that after the age of 60, you don't really have the will to do things that aren't in your highest good. It's not that you don't have the will, but you don't have the will to do what's in your highest good.
It's what I had a great conversation with Ted Kapchuk years ago. I love one of his phrases. He calls it the will that can't be willed. It's part of what I call your golden path, you know, or the Chinese call your Ming. So mm-hmm. as long as you're doing something that's in your highest good, your Ming, you know, your mandate from heaven, your golden path, you're becoming your best self, then after 60, you're allowed to, you can do it. You can find the energy to do the stuff that you're supposed to do. But I'll give you an example, because I'm over 60. I have never been a terribly social person. I actually find conferences kind of intimidating. I love seeing the people, but I also get overwhelmed sometimes by the number of people that I see. It's kind of like, oh, so much talking, you know? And so people don't realize I'm a bit of an introvert. And I'll show you a cute little trick. This is a fun one. If you put a straight...
So I just want to mention to folks, Lily and I can see each other because we're using software that lets us see each other. But y'all out there in radio land, you're not going to be able to see this. So let's describe it as if they can't see you.
Oh, yeah. So you take a straight edge, whether it's a pen or a pencil, whatever, and you put it on your brow bone and on your cheekbone, right in the center of your eye, okay? And don't press too hard, but just very lightly hold it on your brow bone and your cheekbone, and then open and close your eye. Okay. If you can open your eye completely,
you're a
natural introvert. I have that. You have that. If you get stuck halfway in between, you're in between an introvert and extrovert. If you get stuck and you can't open your eyelid, you're an extrovert. Okay. So knowing that, you can see who's going to do well with isolation, who isn't. So all the introverts are going, oh, this is a relief. I'm perfectly happy. I feel a little guilty about that too. But you're going to see right away that there's something that says, look, I charge better because I'm an introvert by myself. Other people charge with other people. So they're suffering like crazy right now because they're not charging. There's no one or not enough people around to charge from. So when I was younger, I tried really, really hard to be social. I tried to go with my girlfriends to a bar on Friday night. Back then it was TGI Fridays. Oh, terrible place. But I mean, because it was a meat market. But, you know, I would try to go out and have drinks and socialize or go dancing. And I'm thinking, oh my God, I just want to go home and read a book. I just want to go home and read a book. You know, I struggled so much. And a lot of my friends are very social. They have dinner parties. And I love my friends. And I'm happy to go to a small dinner party, but a big dinner party or a big, you know, cocktail party is kind of like, especially if I don't know people. And I used to make myself do it. I'd make myself go. And when I'm there, I'm fine. I'm socially, you know, graceful most of the time. And I do a good job at a party. It's just that I get tired from a party. And then I turn 60. I can't go to the parties. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I'll go, but it's like, it's so hard now. It's like my body goes, yeah, not in your highest good to go to a party right now. You know, so once in a while I'll go and people are going, oh, wow, Lily, it's so nice to see you. You know, or I'll go to a conference or something. But it's my body doesn't want that anymore. And so I can't say yes right away because I don't know if I can go or not. I'll just go, well, I've got something booked. Let me see if I can move it around. And I'll go, sorry, I can't come. You know, yeah, I have to watch it because my body doesn't want to. It's like, I can't make myself do it.
This is, I think, one of the real benefits of aging, at least it has been for me, is that the older I get, the more I'm okay with my really quirky self. So I can remember when I was young, same sort of thing. It's like, hey, it's Friday night. We're going to go do these things. It's going to be fun. I would hate it.
Me
it
too.
Wasn't fun. It's like, what's wrong with me? Because mm-hmm. this isn't fun.
And it's nothing wrong with you. It's just that you're trying to be something that you're not, you see. And so the good news is every decade has a different, you know, lesson. The one at 50, which I also really loved, and I did it fairly well at the time, was you are supposed to not care what other people think about you anymore. And if you can get through that one, then you can stop doing what you don't want to do. So you have to kind of do things in degrees. So if someone thinks, God, you're such an introvert. It's like, yeah, I am. So what?
Yeah, I am. And
you know, and I love you dearly, and I'll see you sometimes.
I got the greatest birthday present on my 50th birthday.
Did you? What did you get?
I did. I got a panic attack.
Oh my God. You poor baby.
No, it was well, yes, in the midst of it, I was in Nanjing, China. I was working on the book that I was translating. And I was all excited because I was going to go to Yixing and get some teapots the day I turned 50. So I'm on this little bus on the way from Nanjing to Yixing. And I'm about halfway there. This little bus, all these people are smoking. You know, it's China. It's a mess. But I've been living in China and I knew my way around. But all of a sudden, I was flipped out. I'm thinking, oh my God, what am I doing? I'm in the middle of this like crazy bus ride. I don't have a house. I don't have a partner. I don't have a retirement account anymore. All of the things that I thought I was supposed to have at the age of 50.
Yep.
I don't have any of them. Mm-hmm. And I was freaking out.
Yep.
I mean, I was all by myself having a panic attack. And I don't know where this stuff comes from, Lillian. But a voice in my head basically said, okay, all right, fine, Michael Max, maybe you really have screwed this up completely. So what of the past 10 years of your life would you have changed to have a different outcome at this moment? And I looked back on those past 10 years and I would not have changed anything, nothing, none of it, not one thing. And so it was like, well, then I guess my idea of what 50 was supposed to be needs to be rewritten.
That's right. And so the thing is, what you're doing is taking away all that socialization that says these are the things that you should do or be at this age. You're going, well, I'm not that. Is that okay? I just spent the next few years kind of going, think I'm okay. I think I'm good. And by the way, I was right there with you at 50. So, although it was earlier than yours, but no, I felt I went through kind of the same thing. And this is where the wood element very, very often wants to compare. Like, if, you know, competition thing. It's like, I'm going to compare. But I said to someone one time, so she was saying to me, oh, my friend is, you know, she's 62 and she's retiring and I'm not, I still have to work. And I said, would you want her husband? Would you want her kids? Would you want her house even? She goes, no, God, no. I go, then why are you comparing? It's not even apples and oranges. It's like, it's not even a fruit. It's like apples and, like, you know, something
apples
else.
Apples and BMWs. Apples.
Yeah, it's like, why are you comparing? Because what it does is it makes you really unhappy. And so I look at that and kind of go, don't compare. And it's hard not to compare because there's these milestones you think you're supposed to have. But I don't know. I think you're probably a lot more free than a lot of people. And freedom is a good thing.
Freedom is a good thing. Mm. Although it usually means you're a standard deviation or two, maybe three from the top of the bell curve. And so, you know, it also makes you kind of, you know, an odd duck.
It does. It does. I mean, I have to tell you, people have said to me repeatedly over my life, I can't believe you make a living doing this. And I go, if you can make a living doing facing, you can make a living doing anything. I swear. It's like, I'm a good example of like how not to be like in the center of the bell curve.
Yeah. So that's such a good question. I mean, we're here in the middle of COVID-19. Which I think has everybody, you know, at least us, I'm thinking of our acupuncture community. And you reach bigger communities, so I'm curious to hear your sense of it because you swim in bigger ponds than I do. But it seems to me that in our acupuncture community, it's like everybody is a brand new, freshly minted graduate. Because who am I and what am I doing right now? We all have that question. You could have been practicing 30 years. And the question at this moment might be, who am I and what do I do here?
Well, I think what I see in people is that everyone has critical transitions and they're usually predicated on the time period before and after decade birthday, but they're sometimes caused by crises, and especially large crises like natural disasters and things like this particular pandemic. It's really an opportunity to reassess. And some people really don't like reassessing, right? They want things to be the way they've been, or they had goals and plans. And it's very hard for someone who has goals and plans not to achieve those goals and plans because, you know, there's dictates that are preventing them from doing whatever they want to do, or traveling here or going there, or, you know, or making this much money this year, you know? And I think the thing that I would love to tell people is that there's such value in adaptability. And that's why I think our medicine is so valuable, because I do consider myself primarily part of the Chinese medicine community. This medicine is phenomenal for adapting to different circumstances. And this is why when you have a disease, we don't treat people by the disease, we treat them by their symptoms. And that's why we're adaptable, because we're doing symptoms, not diseases, right?
And we're also looking at, what's this person made of in the first place? What are the resources that they have that they're not connected to?
And what can we build up, and what can we support, and what can we make stronger? And so I think this medicine is actually very timely. And I personally think that no one's really talking about it very much right now. But one of the reasons why China did so well is because they were doing so many herbs for combinations for this, the virus, especially in Wuhan. And there's a lot of herbology that's coming out now that's saying, wow, these things really work. Of course, they're not mainstream, but we're hearing about them. Here's this formula and this formula. It's like, it's great.
Yes. They're not mainstream. They're more mainstream in China. They're completely not mainstream here. In fact, there's articles out these days about how awful Chinese medicine is, and we're, you know, killing rhinos and all this other stuff. We've actually been getting some bad press lately. But that aside,
the reason is because it works. You've got to remember.
It's blowback, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But we know it works. And we may not be mainstream, but of course we can help the people that are in our sphere of influence.
Right. Absolutely.
And there's that. In this time of reassessment and reconfiguration, what are, from your point of view, What are some of the organs that we would particularly want to both support and also lean on? Mm-hmm. Right. So like, let's say someone's really woody. I'm kind of a woody character.
Right.
Myself.
Mm-hmm.
So what could I do to like ease up that wood a bit and allow myself to transition into maybe what the next phase of my life actually is?
Right. Well, you're going to see something really interesting happen when you have crises like this. And that is, you're really going to start recognizing what your habits are. And a lot of behavior is habitual. And one of my students commented one time, it takes 66 days to make a new habit. Mm. So I think we're not there yet. We're not even at 66 days. So people are still fighting against this idea of staying home. And with the wood element, especially, I find that wood and fire are probably having the hardest time. Wood because it can't do what it wants to do, and fire because it's not having enough fun with enough people, you know? So I'm seeing those as the two elements that are struggling a lot. And what I would say about wood and about this time period altogether is that we're being given a chance to stop being so young. And because the Western world is so unbelievably young and has been for, you know, since the Industrial Revolution, probably, we're being given a chance to rest. And rest is hard for someone who's wood. And so it really builds up the wood. So when you can do again, you'll have the energy to do better. I find a lot of wood people have been very brittle because they were operating on energies that were starting to pull from their source, you know, the jing. I think right now we can really get that rest in order to start doing better. And also looking at how much stuff that we did was extraneous, mm-hmm. you know, like how much we don't need rather than how much we think we do need. I have a lot of friends who were very compulsive about shopping, and they said to me, all I'm buying right now is groceries, you know, and I was going, I guess I really don't need all that stuff that I thought I was going to buy. I was going to buy a new car, but you know, my old car is working fine. I don't even go anywhere right now. And there's that kind of reassessment that says, I don't have to be so concerned about status, for example, which wood often is concerned about. So you're seeing a chance for wood to be supported by a lifestyle that actually needs more of than it's ever had. You know, since you were young, when your mom put you down for a nap, you know, it's like, there's a reason why you had a nap in kindergarten, you know, it's like kids get tired out. And as adults, we get tired out, but now we have a chance, maybe not to take naps if you hate naps, but I happen to like them, but also just stop doing so much. And we're seeing that not doing so much might be good. So I'm seeing that. And you'll see the frustration because the wood wants to go somewhere. I tell most of the wood people I work with, they need to find some projects. Projects are kind of important. You might want to reorganize something. You want to build something. It's like create a project that has a start date and an end date. You know, it's like do something specific that, you know, make something. And you're going to see that's going to help a lot. You know, with the fire element and the socialization, I'm getting an awful lot of phone calls and an awful lot of Skype calls and Zoom calls, which, by the way, I have taken most of them. or I've, you know, arranged for a different time for them. People are finding a way to be social without meeting. And who knew that we could find such interesting ways to connect? I mean, some of my closest friends that I actually haven't stayed very much in touch with because I live across the world, I've talked to more since March than I've talked to, I don't know, maybe in a couple of years. We have like every 2 weeks we're on Zoom together.
Yeah, it's a huge reconfiguration.
It is. So we're still being social. It just doesn't, I think what people are missing is the Shen to Shen connection that happens in person.
Yes. I miss going to restaurants and just being around like the group that I'm with.
Yeah.
In a context of other people doing the same thing.
Right.
There's something nourishing about that. I mean, even as an introvert, there's a certain amount of connection and just knowing them in a place that's connected. I can go to a coffee shop and be by myself. And just knowing that I'm like in this field of activity and connection allows me to focus down and really get some work done. It's very curious yin-yang kind of thing like that. I really miss that.
Yeah, and we're going to find that we have things that we miss terribly. I mean, for me, it's much more about just being able to go grocery shopping whenever I want to. rather than thinking about, okay, I'm going to just go.
And not hold your breath.
Yeah. And have to wear a mask, which I really don't like masks, you know, and really think about like washing my hands a zillion times. I washed my hands a lot before this. So I have to say, it's like, oh, there's a lot of, it's like my sister once said she didn't like Seattle because she had to wear too many clothes. I feel like that with masks and gloves and things, like it's too much stuff to put on, you know, but I just miss that freedom of being able to go wherever, whenever you wanted to, you know, that mm-hmm. to me is kind of like that spontaneous ability to just like go do something. It's like, not here.
Well, that's your would be unrestricted, right? So we all have these different emotions, you know, especially with this whole COVID thing. I want to come back to the entanglement piece for a few minutes. Because again, it's quite likely that more than one's coming up at a time. I suspect because of the work that you do, because you can look at a person, you can see what's like most prominent, I would suspect, and what's maybe secondary. You can probably see it. You just look at him and you go, oh yeah, well, there's this one, but this other thing's entangled inside of it.
Mm-hmm. And also the emotions, Mark, you know, all the emotions that you've used a lot or repressed a lot are all show up. So you're going to see how strong the emotions are and which ones are the strongest. Sometimes you have two emotions that are very contradictory, equally strong.
Our work is to help others. And while the methods are numerous, the principles are few. Grasping the principles allows us to understand the structure of the methods. Our work is rooted in the chi transformation of the five phases, the influence of the six confirmations, and the dynamic unfolding of yin and yang. Our work has us attending to the physical and the emotional. Where our patients often see polarities, we see unity and synthesis. I've found Sa'ama acupuncture to be helpful to my patients because it's given me a stronger rooting into the principles of our medicine and how to synergistically blend the five phases with the six climatic influences. This, in turn, can give you a fresh perspective on the channels and organs that allows your treatments to invite powerful change in your patients. And so I'm delighted for Chiological to bring you Toby Daly for a two-day introduction to Sa'ama acupuncture on July 11 and 12. In this real-time live stream, you'll have an opportunity to better understand how the ancient principles of our medicine can better inform your acupuncture practice. Visit the website and look under the courses menu for the details. And now, let's get back to the rest of today's conversation. If you can't do face reading, mm-hmm. This is like saying to an acupuncturist, you can't use needles. If you can't do face reading, how would you work with that kind of thing? How would you tease that apart? Or do you really need to know how to look at it and see it and see what's in front of you before you're able to intervene?
They have lots of ways. I mean, you can tell what elements people are by what they eat. I mean, I used to spend a lot of time on airplanes, right? Which is actually something I'm happy I'm not doing right now because I was doing too much of it. And I'd be on an airplane in Europe and they give you more snacks in Europe than they give in America. And they would offer you either cookies or chips. And I would just watch who'd take the salty and who'd take the sweet. And some people would say, I want both. And they'd give them both because they're really generous, right? And I just watch who would take what because it was so interesting to watch the people who want the salty, crunchy stuff versus the sweet, you know, soft cookie or cake or whatever. And it's like, wow, that person's got a lot more earth than me because I don't take the cake or cookie. I take the crunchy, salty stuff, right? Mm-hmm. I always take the potato chips over almost anything else, French fries too. But that's just, it's a thing. I crave salt. I own probably maybe 14 different salts. So that right there tells you I've got a lot of water. Or people who have lots of sweets in their house, you know, they have dessert every day after dinner or whatever, or an afternoon snack that's, you know, fruit or whatever. They're very earthy. I don't have that. You know, so you can tell by food, or you can tell by the colors that they wear, the styles that they wear, how they decorate their house. You can tell by the sound of their voice. One of my friends, Dee Davis, is a great voice coach, and she talks a lot about people's voices. And it's really easy to tell someone with the wood voice because there's a gravelly sound in the voice. Like, you know, that whiskey voice or that smoker's voice?
Oh, yeah, Tom Waits.
Yeah, that's a wood voice. But really, and it's also got that ability to be really like strong. And I was joking about this years ago, but I don't have a wood voice. And so when I was trying to train my dog, he didn't listen to a thing I said. You know, just keep barking. And, you know, Pan, look at me like, what do you want? So, and I remember one time my son, who's very woody, and he's very athletic and all that, We're talking on Skype because he's living in a foreign country, and my dog is barking like crazy, and he just goes, "Roxy," like in his wood voice. The dog stops and looks around and says, "What's that?" She literally stopped because the wood voice told him.
The wood commanding voice was heard.
Over and over again, doesn't do anything. I just don't have that wood authority that comes out through your throat. Mm-hmm. My voice is much softer, much gentler. It doesn't work for training dogs.
Right. So we would just use our basic understanding of the phases in our Chinese medicine. I mean, really at its root.
Yeah, however you can find to look at it. But you can do it by activities. Like, what do people like to do? Anybody who likes to hike, especially going up, is very woody. Mm-hmm. Like, I have to tell you another funny thing. Years ago, I was married to a woodman, and he loved to go hiking. And I said, I don't like hiking. I don't like going up. He goes, yeah, but going up is the best part. I go, I don't like going up. I like going down. He goes, oh, and going down is really hard. I go, no, going down is really easy. I said, I can walk down to the beach and I can walk on the beach, but I don't like to walk back up again. He goes, that's really weird. He's like, why do you like that? I go, because I'm water. Water has really strong knees. It's like, I like going down. I don't like going up. I'm fine at going down. And he couldn't understand why I didn't like going up. I said, I'll go downstairs, but I won't go upstairs. It's like, it's very odd, but it's just, it's a thing. You know, it's water versus wood. Not in a bad way. It's just a thing.
No, it's just what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. But so I passed him up. Do you like to go up or down? Do you like salt or sweet? Do you like, you know, I just ask him questions.
They're great questions.
Yeah.
And they're relevant.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah.
And it helps. And I think I have a really good friend, Alicia Silva Villanueva in Mexico, and she's really funny. One of her favorite quotes is, to love someone else is to forgive them for not being you. Now, I added on an addendum, and I added on and not doing it your way. Mm-hmm. And I'll just give you an example. I once had an ex who thought that loading the dishwasher was a Tibetan sand painting. Okay? In other words, I never did it right. Okay. This is temporary art, right? And I said to him finally one day, if you care so much about how it's loaded, then you get to load the dishwasher every time. Because I don't care. I just want to get them washed. Well, but you wash them. I go, to love someone else is to forgive them for not being you and not doing it your way. It's like, my way is different than your way. Do whatever you want. I'm going to do my way. You do your way. And I think that's really helpful. And I think when you understand the elements really, really well, you stop punishing someone else for not being you and not doing it your way. It's like, your way is different. I like going down. He likes going up. You know, it's like, so what?
So the person who has to load the dishwasher, just exactly so.
Yeah.
Is that an earthy thing? What is
no.
that?
No. Interestingly enough, it depends on how they do it. Okay.
Oh.
Because wood thinks their way is always the right way, where metal goes for like the most efficient and the way that everything gets the cleanest. Do you know what I'm saying? So metal, the opposites always look alike. And so wood and metal will have a little bit of a tug of war there saying, okay, is this more important or is that more important? Wood will say, I want the most dishes in there possible, right? It's like, let's wash them all. And metal will say, no, you should to leave some out because they're not, you know, getting enough water. So you'll see it's different. One's kind of efficient and one's kind of like organized. One's orderly and organized.
The opposites look alike.
We do, underneath is different.
Yeah.
So I'll give you an example. So a wood person will say, you didn't load the dishwasher right, and they'll redo it. Okay. A metal person will see that it's not loaded the way they want to, and they'll very quietly reorder it. The wood person will say, you didn't do it right, here's the way you do it. And metal will just go, oh dear. And it'll just like quietly fix it and then turn it on.
Which is the one that'll kick you out of the kitchen and say, you're not allowed near my dishwasher?
Wood. Because underneath there is like this frustration. So if you find the emotion underneath the action, then you know what element it is.
You find the emotion under the action, and then you know what element it is.
So if a metal person sees a dishwasher that's like kind of stacked really funny, they'll go, oh dear, oh dear. There'll be anxiety, right? There'll be anxiety because they know that the dishes won't get clean. They'll have to rewash them, and metal doesn't like to do things over again. So they'll reload it in a way that makes all the dishes get clean. So yeah, and the emotion of anxiety will go away as soon as it's done the way they need to do it. And wood will say, get out of here, because I'm going to do this. And they'll go, oh, okay, I can do it best, which is wood, you know? It's nothing wrong with it. My way or the highway, that's all.
What's not to understand?
It's simple. Wood's actually, in my opinion, one of the simplest elements to understand. And what's cool about it is wood people can get mad. And because they're over it so fast, they're easier to forgive because they don't hold grudges and stuff. It's like they get mad, it's over, it's done, you know where you stand, it's all good. It's kind of cool. I don't do that.
Unless they're deeply enmeshed in the past.
Yes. And then they're going to hold.
And then you get that resentment thing.
Yeah. But usually other elements are even better at resentment than the liver people.
Really?
Yeah. It's very interesting.
So, and does resentment look different through the different phases?
Well, there's an area of the face right between the eyebrows. It's where Yintang is. And it's like, you know, it's about a silver dollar size area right around there. And that area has a lot of interesting connotations. So, for example, one of the things that shows up there when it's rumpled is you know, frustration, irritation, impatience, all that. But resentment is also lodged there. So if it doesn't go, if you do it when you're frustrated, it goes away. When you're not frustrated, you're fine. But if it stays that way, it means there's resentment involved because it's underneath the surface. It's like it's holding on to it, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's when you see it. Now, if you have another really weird one, I forget to teach this all the time. It's really interesting. And I have way too much of it. If you can take your fingers and pinch on your forehead so that the flesh comes loose from your forehead, you have too much guilt. That's inverted wood.
Inverted wood. You can pinch your, if you can get like a
flesh in your fingers,
chunk of flesh.
Yeah.
Invert. So that's guilt. That's stored guilt.
That's guilt. Yeah. It's wood that doesn't have any place to go.
Say more about that.
Well, it's an interesting emotion because it's like mangrove swamps where the roots of the tree are more important than the leaves or the branches, you know? And so it's anger towards oneself. And so it's inverted liturgy. And guilt is something, I mean, it can be obviously given to you by someone else, but you take it on and believe it. And so you kind of,
and then it's yours.
Yeah, it's yours. You punish yourself. I think there was a movie by Charlie Sheen was in. I don't remember what the movie was. It wasn't memorable, but the line he said was really funny. He said, pack your bags. We're going on a guilt trip. He was having an argument with his girlfriend. And I thought that was a great line because somebody can definitely make you feel guilty, whether it's your mom, you know, or Catholic, your Catholic nuns at school, or, you know, it's like people can actually give that to you, but it's when you take it on that you allow it to be something. And I joke a lot about the fact that I have Chinese guilt, you know, because Chinese mothers are very good at giving you guilt. You know, oh, it was so painful to give birth to you and look how you treated me. It's like, oh. The teenagers kind of go, oh, God, Mom. Oh, God.
Thanks, Mom.
I've heard there's Jewish guilt, of course, Catholic guilt. I mean, every culture has some kind of
guilt. Every culture has its own flavor.
Yeah. And moms are particularly good at guilt. That's all I have to say. They're particularly good.
Well,
they're better than dad.
Okay, so let me ask you about this, since we're talking about emotions that get entangled.
Right.
Guilt and love.
There's a tricky one. And okay, I'm going to say something a little controversial. I apologize ahead of time because I just...
No, controversial?
Yeah. You mean?
All right.
I only worry if I'm getting taped, you know? Most people don't actually understand love very well. I'm not saying I'm an expert by any means at all, okay? But I'm just going to say... If you look at the fact that the Greeks had, like, I forgot how many kinds of love they had. Do you remember how many? Five, seven, I have something.
I don't know, but they had a lot.
They had a lot,
I
right?
recall.
And we had this one word.
More than one.
And I was talking to someone very recently who I thought was confusing pity with love. And she said, ooh. Oh, I feel so sorry for him. If I break up with him, what's going to happen to him? Thinking, Oh dear. I mean, it's called rescuing too, of course, but underneath that there is pity too. And she was saying, oh, that shows me how much I love him. And I'm going, okay. I'm not going to say, no, you don't love him. It's not for me to say that. I'm just saying I was a bit confused. I also hear people say, you know, they confuse love and need, and people confuse a lot of things. Like there's that one saying, if you love someone, set them free. If they're yours, they'll come back, kind of thing.
Yes. And if they don't, they never were.
That's right. That whatever that, I'm sorry to say, I can't remember who that's from.
I don't know. It's, you know, it's something that kids learn like in junior high, high school. That's where that first starts to get imprinted in your mind.
And it's actually a very accurate thing to think about. If you love someone, you let them be who they are, let them do what they need to do. If, you know, it doesn't mean there isn't a connection to you, but it's not that insecurity that says, oh, I need you around me all the time so I know what you're doing, or yeah, I'm going to check your iPhone to see who you've written messages to. It's like, that's like not very loving, do you know? So I think that we have a lot of love gets entangled with lots of emotions.
Yeah. Pity, guilt, fear too, probably.
So many. Yeah, guilt, probably all yeah. kinds of stuff, right? And I'm not saying people don't do love well. People can love very, very well, but there's...
Oh, come on. Really? Is that really true? Think about all the popular love songs and breakup songs and how screwed up love is. Don't tell me love is easy.
It's not
easy. I don't think it's easy at all.
Actually, I think it's a natural human desire to love and be loved. I think when you start, you know, it's like the parent-child thing, for example, any parent, mother or father, and that parent-child thing is wonderful. It's beautiful, right? But I think it gets perverted over time for all kinds of reasons. I think it's easy to love. I think it's hard to love well. I think it's easy to love.
And it's hard to love and forgive someone that you love for being who they are.
Sometimes it is, yeah.
Like you were saying earlier.
Well, because we have expectations of how people are supposed
to. Honey, if you really loved me, you'd let me do the dishwasher the way I want to do it.
That's kind of guilt tripping, isn't it? Yeah. Pack your bags. So yeah, I think in Chinese culture, love isn't a huge thing except for parent-child in the parent-child cycle. Now, that being said, I have to bring up something. My grandmother and I had a really interesting conversation one time. I said to her, well, what about romantic love? And she said, well, you have to love yourself first. I go, what? She said, a parent loves the child because the child is part of them. So it's implying that you should love yourself, because if you love your child because it's part of you, you should love yourself. So you should actually reparent yourself as well, you know. So she was trying to explain to me there's a cycle of love is actually about loving someone else as if they're you, which means you should love yourself. Okay, got that? And so if you love yourself, then you'll attract someone who loves you, you, not someone who you're pretending to be. So I used to do shrinking to fit. Like, I was like one of those sponges that, like, you take out all the water to stick it into that little, you know, capsule. I was one of those people. Like, just like squeeze myself into some little mold so I could be with that person. And when I stopped being that person, this didn't happen every time, but several times, I wasn't really wanted because I wasn't the person they thought I was, because I was trying to be something that I thought they wanted. Does that make sense?
And you weren't even showing up as who you were.
No, God, no. I was out of my body. Barely. Yeah. Quite lovable out of my body.
So this brings up another one about the need and desire for acceptance. And I suspect that also gets entangled with a lot of other kinds of emotions.
I have to tell you, I work with a lot of people who have issues with criticism. And if they grew up with critical parents or critical teachers or whoever, critical coaches or whatever, they, you know, they become human pincushions, basically. And they end up in
relationships. Hey, careful. You're talking to acupuncturists here.
Yeah, exactly. But maybe why they like needles so much. But the thing is, I think that they get in relationships sometimes where they're trying to get validation. But when you're looking for validation for someone else, you leave yourself really vulnerable then to being less than yourself, because you're going to want their approval on everything, you know? And so I think that the whole point for me, in terms of someone's, you know, meaning, their mandate from heaven or their destiny or their golden path, whatever you want to call it, is for you to be as much of you as you can be. And this is why self-awareness is so valuable. You know, knowing who you are and how you feel and, you know, what you're supposed to do. It's like, people can't do a lot to you. For example, one of the issues
without your permission.
Yes, without your permission.
They can't do a lot to you without your permission.
Right. And so, for example, there's a lot of projection out there. And so if I were to say to you, for example, oh my God, you're so stubborn, right? Well, is that a bad thing? Like, what's wrong with being stubborn?
I like to think of it as persistence.
Yeah. So what's wrong with that? Is it because I'm not getting my way, making you do something I want you to do that you don't want to do? It's like, is that okay? And maybe I'm stubborn and I don't like my own stubbornness. So I tell you it's not good because I've been told mine's bad. You know, there's a projection thing going there. But if I own my own stubbornness, I go, God, you're so stubborn, but so am I. Or I'm being pushy. Or you could actually have that recognition that it's more about you than about the other person. You know, and that's the value of knowing your own emotions and your own, I think, constitution, emotional constitution.
And to appreciate those parts of yourself.
And we are both stubborn and we are both persistent, by the way, because we have good chins. But I once said to someone, because someone said to me, you're so stubborn. I said, good thing I am, because you're a bulldozer. And if I weren't stubborn, you'd be bulldozing me. You'd be dozing me. Like, you'd be like running over me. And he stopped and went, what?
You know, I'm glad you bring this up. This is something I've noticed in my practice. Mm-hmm. That people will talk about parts of themselves mm-hmm. in a very critical and negative light.
Terrible way, yeah.
And so often as I listen to them and I'm hearing about how their life's unfolding and like the things that they do or that they like to do or the kind of job they have, and then they're talking about this one part in a very critical way, and I'm thinking to myself, wait a minute. That's your superpower.
You're exactly right. Now you're way ahead of
me. That is not the thing that's wrong with you. Yeah. This is the thing that's right about you.
You're exactly right. And this is where, when you have what's called the dark night of the soul, which by the way takes 4 to 6 years, I call it walking the shadow side of the moon, but it's a really difficult time. When you go through that stuff, what you find out about is who you are in crisis, which like tells you the most about who you are. And then you find out that some of the things you didn't like about yourself were the most valuable things about you. And then when someone says to me, so, oh, you're this way, I go, yeah, I am, you know, or no, I'm not. I remember one time I was talking with someone who was mad at me and he said, you're this. I forgot what he said I was. And I stopped and I go, no, I'm not. And he goes, yes, you are. I go, no, I'm not. I know myself really well. No, that's not me. He goes, yes, it is. I go, no, that's not me. I wouldn't allow it. Mm-hmm. I get really frustrated. I go, you might want to look in the mirror. I was trying to be subtle, which didn't go over well.
sometimes there's no way to have it go well.
No, but really there was a projection going on that I wouldn't accept. And it was probably the first time in my life that I wouldn't take something in from somebody who said, you're this, and go, oh, am I? Am I really like that? Because I come to a place through a really big crisis where I said, no, that's not me. I know a lot about me. That's not me. You know? Yeah. And that's kind of
beautiful.
Refreshing. It feels good.
Yes, it does.
Yeah. It's like, I don't have to take that. Yeah. It's not true.
And then because if there was a seed of it that was in you and it was unexplored or unexamined or entangled with something else, right. You could go, well, yeah, there is that.
Right.
But when you're clear about where it is.
I sometimes joke about this one, this particular one I'm telling you right now. I apparently have the ability to hold a grudge, which I've worked on for a long time, right? So I don't actually get mad easily, but when someone's really hurt me, I tend to hold on to it, right? And I have to say, I looked at it for a long time because someone said, oh, you like vengeance. I go, no, I don't ever do anything to anybody. But I have to admit, this is something I don't like to admit, but I'll just admit it to all you people out there. I sometimes enjoy someone's instant karma a bit too much, the person who harmed me. It's like, I didn't do anything, but it's like something happens to them and I go, oh, wow. And I'm thinking, ooh, and I don't, that's actually something I don't like about myself very much, but it's like, I do that sometimes. It's like, yeah. So luckily I don't do anything. I just like watch it and kind of go, you know, a little bit like, oh, it's like, that's, I don't like that. So, but if I know that about me, someone can say, oh, you're so vengeful. I go, no, I'm not. I have this. This is what I can do. I can enjoy someone's instant karma too much because I got hurt and I think that they should like see how it feels.
As my young 15-year-old niece likes to say, karma is real, bro.
It is. Yeah, it really is. And sometimes it's not fast enough for me, but I kind of gotten over most of it. I'm working on this trait, by the way.
Not fast enough. That's great. You know, it is actually, I think, very helpful and healthy to know what we're working on.
Absolutely. It's like, I would never claim to be like, you know, fully baked, you know, it's like, there's always stuff to work on. It's like, we have our whole lives to get to know ourselves. And I think I love that saying from the Tao Te Ching the most. I'm going to paraphrase, of course, so I don't quote anything well, but it says something like, to know others is to become wise, and to know yourself is to become enlightened. And this is where we're doing this trip, this road trip, right? To find out all about ourselves. Like, really know yourself, to know myself.
Well, it's funny that you should bring up the word cooked, because originally I wanted to talk to you about your book and cooking and yangsheng and stuff like that. But Lillian, it's already an hour almost, and there's still a question that I was going to ask you in the beginning.
Okay.
But I haven't gotten to it yet. So we may have to talk about food another day.
Absolutely. We can always do another talk. No problem at all.
So as I was sitting down and thinking about, ooh, I get to talk to Lillian Bridges today. What do I want to talk about? Because this is kind of how I roll. I don't have like a script and a million things. It's like, oh, Lillian Bridges. So like, what's up? What do I want to talk to her about? You know, I put myself on the hot seat when I do these. And what came up for me today, again, we're in the midst of COVID-19. So that's a kind of a journey of sorts. And I've read your book. Mm-hmm. I have to keep going back and looking at it again and again.
It's kind of dense.
It's just that there's a lot there. And thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome.
Because it's helpful. And every now and then I sit down in my clinic and without even trying, I'll look at somebody and I'll see something. I'll just be like, oh, there it is.
Cool.
Right. It is cool. So thank you so much for that contribution. I really appreciate it. What I was thinking about earlier today is we're all trying to like navigate and figure our way through a time that is unlike any time any of us have lived through. Mm-hmm. The word navigation came to mind. Mm-hmm. Because it's like, you know, and you work with this thing, you know, this golden path and Ming and all this. And so the word navigation came to mind. It's like, how do you navigate through difficulties? And then this other word came up. And I just want to toss this out to you and just see what it rings for you. Because I think there's navigation, which means you kind of have a map and you kind of have an idea and you probably got some landmarks, maybe even a star chart and some tools to know how to use it. But sometimes you're even more, I don't know if lost is the right word, but let's just say lack of orientation. And so for me, the word wayfinding came up. It's like, how do you wayfind? How do you seek a path when the usual ways of tracking things mm-hmm. and making sense of things are no longer available? Mm-hmm. I wonder if you have any ideas about that.
That's a really good question. It's very deep, actually. I probably have lots of things I could say about that, but let's start with something.
And we have as much time as we need.
Okay, cool. And this is what I spend most of my life doing, is talking to people about how to find their way. I often say that there's this river of life that we spend most of our lives trying to get back to after we've been socialized. And I think it's the Ren and Du channels combined, you know, on the face. That's the center of the face is called the river of life, by the way. And so most of the markings that are in the middle are the most important, because it means your life has changed in some way. And right now we're in one of those times where our lives are changing and we have to kind of reorient. And I think this is where I want people to really recognize that they always know why they're here. Always. It's just sometimes they need help refinding that. And it's not about seeking pleasure in a way. It is about seeking the kind of joy that how do I explain it? It's the kind of joy that's embodied. So it's not just a feeling sense in terms of like an emotion, like, oh, I'm so happy, because that's actually very light, but it's like a complete body sense of joy mm-hmm. that you're doing something that you're meant to be doing.
Like you wouldn't rather be anywhere else than where you are
at that moment in time. Yeah. And mm-hmm. and I think your body has a lot of wisdom that we don't pay attention to. I mean, the way that I was raised, the way that I think, you know, may not be well, I know it's not very ordinary, that's for sure. But I will say,
lucky you.
Well, in my family it's okay, it's normal, but you know, I was taught that we have the exact body that we're supposed to have, with all the talents that we're supposed to use, that we have everything that we need to be who we're supposed to be in this life and to bring through what we're supposed to bring through. So there's nothing missing. So when you start thinking about how to change things about yourself, well, I don't believe in change. I believe in going in and finding new stuff or growing, but I don't believe in changing. If that makes any sense. I mean, it doesn't make any sense to me to become something different. You have to become more you or a stronger you. And so I have to give people back their faith in themselves and their own knowingness that they sometimes forget to pay attention to because we listen too much to other people. And we
and we're so encouraged to look externally.
Yeah.
You've got this bad feeling, go buy this thing. Oh, you got this emotion, take this drug. I mean, we even do it with acupuncture. Oh, I'm stressed out. Well, you better take those herbs.
Yeah. And so the thing is, though, when I started looking at the idea that we have the exact body that we're supposed to have, I used to mm-hmm. really be upset the fact that I'm not weak. I'm delicate. I'm like bone china. Okay. You just need to hand wash me and don't put me in the dishwasher, basically. I'm not sickly. I'm just not tough, you know? And I mm-hmm. really was upset about that. But I thought to myself, with the spirit that I have, which is unfortunately pretty kick-ass, although I wouldn't be able to do what I'm doing, if I had a body that was as tough as my spirit, I think I'd be a terribly scary woman. But instead, I've been given a more gentle voice and a kind of a delicate constitution. So I can't be this tough person, but I can say things in a way that people look at me and kind of go, she's not scary. Do you know what I'm saying? I'm not like intimidating. And so I thought, well, maybe I am supposed to have this like delicate body that needs to be hand washed. You know, I used to be really upset about that. And I tried making peace with a lot of the ways that I am and a lot of things that I can and can't do. So I don't do a lot of mathematical and numerical stuff because my brain doesn't work that way. I hire people to do that stuff. I have a very good accountant. He's perfectly happy with me giving him a whole bunch of stuff to fix and organize and calculate. He's perfectly happy, you know, because why should I spend so much time trying to become mathematical when it's not my nature? Do you see? So I think we waste a lot of time trying to be something that we're not. And, mm-hmm. and instead, I'm really good with words. I'm really good with feelings. I'm good with other things. I'm really good at those things. So why wouldn't I do that more? And why be upset that I'm not mathematical when I'm mystical, you know? So I look at that. I want people to like really accept themselves. That's one of my goals. Mm-hmm. And in these terrible times, this is the time to accept yourself.
And it's such a lovely, I'm just kind of taking this in. Because I'm a short, skinny male with a big nose.
Lucky you.
Okay. Well, you know, but when I look out in the world at like advertising, for example, I never see me.
Yeah.
Which in some ways is great because it's like, oh, I'm a little more impervious to advertising because I don't see image. It's like, well, I can't strive for that. I could never be that. I don't have that kind of body. So I can just forget about that. But there's a lot that I think all of us, you know, as humans, you know, we grow up and I'm supposed to be this or supposed to be that, or I wish I was this or wish I was that. And what you said about we've got the perfect body to bring forth the gifts that we have, and you talking about that you've got this really powerful spirit. If you put that in a high octane body,
I'd be an Olympic athlete.
Well, I mean, you could, and you could use those powers for good, but you might also use those powers maybe not for so much good. You might run yourself off the rails with that.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I took a class recently. I'm not going to mention the person's name, but this person is fiercely intelligent, mm-hmm. wickedly, fiercely, brilliantly, articulately intelligent. And if this person had a little more wood energy, it would be hard to stay in their presence. They would be terrifying. But this person has magnanimous, magnificent, tremendous amounts of pericardium energy. Mm-hmm. So this person is wickedly intelligent, fiercely wickedly intelligent with kindness.
Oh, that's what a lovely combination. Mm-hmm. And you can take that.
And so,
a spoonful of sugar makes the medicine go down.
Yeah.
Mary Poppins wisdom.
Yeah.
It's actually true. Right?
It is true. And so thank you for the appreciation that I've got the body that is just right for bringing forth my particular temperament and gifts.
So I have a cousin who's pretty much built like you. And he told my mom one time he wished he was tall and, you know, all these things, right? And he actually is balding. And she said, first of all, you'll never find a bald beggar. Men who are balding have extra testosterone. You're very lucky to have that. You'll be successful. Then she said, and when you are shorter, you're like a coiled spring. Think about that. That's all she said. Mm-hmm. Like a coiled spring. Think of all the possibilities that a coiled spring can do. Like, boing, boing, right? And he got so happy. He goes, you mean it's a good thing? She goes, oh, it's very lucky. She told him. He's a coiled spring. That's what people who are shorter have, that bounce. Do you know what I'm talking about? It's a bounce.
Yeah, I do.
It's a coiled
spring. Yeah, I do.
And that's an amazing way of using wood.
Mm-hmm.
See?
Wonderful.
So you have exactly what you need to be who you are in this world. It's not easy, because I actually struggled with that for a very long time, thinking this was wrong, that was wrong. I was very influenced by society, by, you know, fashion magazines. I was in the fashion industry. I was in acting for when I was younger. I was in fields that made you feel like everything was wrong. I go out for an audition. They go, oh, you're too this. Oh, you're too that. It's like, you're not enough of this. You know, and I felt wrong and bad. And I went, wait a minute, I can't be wrong and bad about everything, right? What's good? And I started really looking at what's good. And the older I get, the more I appreciate exactly what I have and what I was given to do.
I think this is one of the gifts of age.
Oh, yes. Wonderful.
I really do. And again, I'm struck by something you said earlier in our conversation. After the age of 60, you cannot use your will to do what's not helpful for you.
Yeah. It's a hard transition, actually. It's like, wait, whoa, what's going on? Why can't I do that?
Well, for me, the gift in that, it's not that I don't get to use my will. It's not that I don't get to do things. I just have to be in alignment with it.
Yes. It's the higher will, the will that can't be willed. It's the will of the...
It's the will that can't be willed.
And that's, that's one of my favorite sayings from Ted Kaptchuk. It's just great. It says it all. It's like, that's from the mean. That says, this is the will that allows you to become your best self. It's why you're here. And by the way, speaking of aging, there's a book, what's it called? Immortal Sisters, Secrets of Taoist Women, I think. And it's a really interesting book, and the commentary is quite good in that one. And one of the things I talk about is fulfilling your worldly obligations before you can become your most spiritual self, your most productive self. So, you know, raising those kids or working for someone else or taking care of your aging parents or all that stuff, you know, and then at some point you kind of go, wait, it's just me. It's like my life. And it's like, that's when you're the freest. That's actually when you are supposed to be the most productive.
Mm-hmm. I know in the Jewish tradition that not everyone studies Kabbalah. Some do, most don't. But if you're going to study Kabbalah, it's after you've had a family and a business. And it's after you've done your worldly responsibilities and you're capable of doing like embodied reality. Then you get to mess with the other stuff. But messing with it before that, not such a good idea.
It's not going to get you very far, because you're not going to get it. You have to have some experience, you know? And you have to have suffered some things to stop suffering. As much.
Stop suffering.
Well, it's kind of
as much.
I'm not suffering from this whole thing that's happening right now. I'm not. And people are astonished that I'm not suffering. It's like, I'm just not. It's like, maybe it's because I'm very watery. As you know, my knees are good, but the water elements kind of goes, yeah, okay, whatever. It's like, I'll just go along.
Yeah, whatever. I'll flow with that.
Yeah.
I had a little epiphany the other day. That I'm still working through it. It was like one of those things where it kind of shakes everything and you go, oh, okay, I'll pay attention. Since this happened and I closed my clinic, 6 weeks ago, I've been sleeping really well. I mean, by and large, sleeping really well.
Ooh, oh my God, you'll be ready to go really soon.
Okay. Well, here's the thing. The other day I was, you know, a lot of people saying, oh, I'm essential. I should be out there. We should be open. And I'm thinking to myself, nope, I'm not ready to do it. I'm enjoying not seeing patients. As much as I love my work and I am deeply grateful for my work, I feel it's a privilege to do my work. And there's a lot that it gives me. I realized last week I had this deep sense of having been unburdened because I'm not seeing patients. And at first I was like, wait a minute, that's uncomfortable. What's up with this burden?
Right.
And it's like, okay, I've been shouldering and I willingly shoulder the burden because there's always a shadow piece.
Sure.
That can be helpful to look at. And I just realized there's this sense of burden that's gone along with my work. And this is a great time to sit with that and see what happens.
And then when you go back, you'll be rested. I mean, people don't understand we're being given a chance to rest. It's like,
I'm not going back till I'm rested.
Yeah. People were burnt out. And this is a chance mm-hmm. to get over burnout. It's like, how wonderful is that? I mean, the whole world got put on pause. You know, it's like, oh, that's the kind of a cool thing.
I very much feel that way.
Me too.
I am grateful for the pause.
Me too.
Yeah. 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 I don't know what comes next and that, you know, not knowing does create some anxiety.
Well, control is an illusion, you know? so I think we're learning that we can't control everything and we can't plan the way we wanted to plan. And maybe that's a really good thing. You know, sometimes we plan too much.
Yeah.
And then we get in our own way because things have to unfold. And I think people have had some interesting realizations in the past 6 weeks. I'm kind of hoping we get a little bit longer to go.
Well, and I think we can choose it to some degree.
Yeah. I want that 66 days to feel how different it is when you don't do it the way you used to do it. We're not there yet. That's a long time, 66 days.
I like that, 66 days. All right, that's, you know what? That's the number I'm going to shoot for. I like that.
Actually, one of my students, Stella, I can't remember her last name right now. She lives in Los Angeles, but she's the one who told me that. And it's your body wants homeostasis all the time. And it's 66 days when you stop doing something, it creates a new homeostasis. But if you go back to the way you were within that 66 days, you just start over again. So I'm kind of hoping to go 66 days with this and see what happens when I don't work the way I used to work.
I like it. That's really helpful. I'm with you on that, Lillian. We can check back maybe in a couple of months and see where things are at. And we'll talk about food.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Thank you so much. It's always such a pleasure to hang out with you.
It's delightful talking to you. Thank you so much for having me.
You know, one of the things that I really love about Chinese medicine is that I can sit down for a conversation with someone like Lillian, who studied face reading, but she hasn't studied medicine in the same way that we've studied medicine in yet, because we're speaking a common language through the five phases. We can completely understand each other and the perspective that we have to share. I hope that you've enjoyed this conversation with her. I always love sitting down and having a chat with her, and I come away thinking about how we are connected in our bodies, in our mind, in our spirit, in so many ways. You know, often we learn in school and we read in different books about how things are connected. But when I sit down for a conversation with Lillian, I really feel that kind of integration that is spoken to, but often not felt. All y'alls that are members of the podcast, thank you very much. You know, without you, wouldn't be able to bring you these weekly geological episodes. If you're not a member and you would like to help support the effort here, pop on over to the website, look under the Geologicians menu. Love to have you help support the show. Tune in again next week. I've got a special episode coming up with Toby Daly. It's been 2 years since our first conversation, and we're going to get together next week and recap and take a look at where we've been in the past 2 years with SOM acupuncture. Tune in again then for that Geologicious conversation.